Lake Effect continues on WUWM Now. I'm Mitch Tine.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. There's a lot of things that can go wrong in a day. Your car could break down, you could spill coffee on your new shirt, you might come down with a nasty cold, or maybe athlete's foot. None of those is a lot of fun.
But they all seem like a walk in the park in comparison to what we're talking about this month with astronomy contributor Gene Creighton. Hi, Gene. Very nice to see you.
Hi, Mitch. Great to be here.
It's been a while since the two of us have had a chance to talk, so I'm thrilled to get a chance to do this month's conversation with you. We're talking about near-Earth objects that I guess NASA has identified as targets. Before we get into what they are, let's talk about exactly what a near-Earth object is and how near to the Earth we're talking.
So a near-Earth object is either a comet or an asteroid that gets within 30 million miles from our surface, which might sound like a really long way away, but that's just 100 times the distance to the moon. And some of these orbits are very elliptical, so they can get a whole lot closer. I think it's particularly what raises alarms is if it's going to be anywhere between the Earth and the moon.
That would certainly alarm a lot of people.
Yes. Then we're paying close attention. But in principle, objects in that distance range, about 100 times the distance to the moon, could in principle get that close.
Well, and what's appealing about going out and looking at these things?
I'm not sure that appealing is the right term. I think NASA and other agencies, space agencies around the world, recognize that that is a real threat. Whereas most of the time, space is a lovely place to inspire us and make us reach for the stars, as it were. This is the kind of thing that actually could destroy a large city or civilization, see the dinosaur extinction. So this is one of the few things that space can bring us bad news. So the idea is that if we know where these objects are and when they're likely to get close, we can actually do something about it. The key point being having enough time. If you find something like, oh, this is going to hit us next week, then our choices would be very few and not very good. So the hope is that if we study them and we track them, we'll be able to identify the ones that are that might cause us a headache in time.
Now, if I remember correctly, not so long ago, there was not any real full-time effort devoted to studying asteroids that could potentially come into contact with Earth. How is NASA going about studying them today?
It actually has been since the 70s that people have been keeping their eyes open. Let me just say that NASA, I found this title amusing, has a planetary defense officer.
Maybe a thankless job.
a thankless job, but boy, you hope not to be needed. So we have found 18,000 such objects, 18,300 about. And of those, 8,000 we track reasonably well because they're over 328 feet or 100 meters. Anything that big that's traveling on the order of 80,000 miles an hour could certainly take out a city. And if it hit certain parts of the world, it could take out significant fractions of the population. So we would want to make sure that, as I said, we know if such a thing is happening. You might ask, well, what's the point of knowing if we can't do anything about it?
Right. If there's a planetary defense officer, what kind of defense might he have or she have to offer?
We have basically two choices. We would either deflect or we would disrupt. And these are kind of similar sounding words. Deflection means that you would send an impactor that would push it just a little bit. If you had enough warning, a small change could miss the Earth by many, many thousands of miles to make it perfectly safe and reassuring for us. The other option is, what if it's too big and that doesn't work? Then we would probably try and break it into smaller pieces so that even some of it fell to the earth, they wouldn't, you know, take out life as we know it or destroy our planet. After all, the moon formed by something the size of Mars, a fairly large thing, hit the earth, totally destroyed the impactor, and rearranged some of the mantle to make the moon. So these things could happen.
Something, though, that's moving at 80,000 miles per hour would be, seem like it would be fairly hard to hit, and depending on how large it is, difficult to do something about. What kinds of man-made materials could we use to deflect or at least partially destroy before it came to Earth?
Well, for the deflection, we're literally thinking we would send a fast, something like a rocket. And that would be enough if it's targeted. I mean, I'm actually amazed how well we understand orbital mechanics and how much detail we're capable of anticipating how to hit a target. I do see the problem. What if what we send isn't sufficiently powerful to actually change its course enough? And the farther ahead we know of this, the less we need to change its course. If it turns out that something big that was hiding and that we found kind of at the last minute, as it were, like say 5 years in advance as opposed to 15, well, then we might have to consider our other options, and you would probably need some kind of weapon to break it. And I know that in the past there have been conversations about, well, do we really want to send nuclear weapons? Well, we might not have a whole lot of choices.
Given the size of these objects, are they especially difficult to see?
Yes. Yes, because they are small, ultimately. There are people who look for comets. That's what they do as a hobby. But oftentimes you will find out about them, you know, a few months before they're naked eye objects, right? So we're looking for, we want a much better timeline than that. I feel like this conversation has taken a rather dark turn, and I want to reassure our lovely listeners that what we're discussing is incredibly unlikely. It's just that it is one of those things that in principle could at some point, something big will hit the earth in the fullness of time. It's just that if we are unlucky enough that this happens in the near future, that we have a plan to deal with it. So it's nice to discuss these in a philosophical fashion long before we actually have real serious choices to make.
But it sounds like as a scientist, you would be more concerned about being in a car accident than being hit by a near-Earth object.
Much more, yes. I don't spend any time, I don't lose any sleep on near-Earth objects. But I do think these are interesting problems to tackle. I don't know if you recall, we had a few months ago pieces of a Chinese satellite falling in the sky, and it turns out that it's hard to predict exactly when and where these pieces will fall. So those kind of questions fine-tune our ability to predict these motions, and I guess it helps to more accurately estimate the probability of near-Earth object interactions.
Well, and you mentioned the pieces of the Chinese satellite that came falling to Earth. It's a fairly common occurrence that that either space junk or other debris from outer space actually makes its way through the atmosphere, right?
That's true. We should point out that these pieces of debris are significantly smaller and they're traveling at much lower speeds. So most of these actually disintegrate in our atmosphere, and most of them are on trajectories that are intended to fall in the ocean so that when they eventually lose their altitude, they do something safe and plunge somewhere in the Pacific.
Well, and so before we wrap up, we talk about NASA studying these potential targets. How is it doing it? Is it using space-based telescopes to see them?
Yes. One of the instruments that they used was called WISE, and that's an infrared instrument. Infrared is very useful in this because these rocks don't glow, of course, they're not stars, but they do emit some infrared radiation, and we're able to kind of catalog those. They are particularly concerned about things that are 1,000, so more than 3,000 feet across, because those really are doozers. WISE gave us the very happy information that the asteroids that are that big are fewer than we had predicted. So we were able to actually see them in the sky, and based on our models, we realized there's fewer than we expected, which is just as well.
Sounds like a happy note to end on.
Okay, very good.
Gene, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Gene Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor. You can listen to all of our conversations with her at WUWM.com. It's the end of the world.